The Grizzly Berry Cafe podcast is brought to you by our pals over at Gazelle.com. When you've got used consumer electronics that you need to convert into cold, hard, or soft, lukewarm cash, don't sell them, kids. Gazelle them. The Grizzly Berry Cafe is also brought to you by Cobra Eye Radar, a sleek and compact detection unit that provides you with state-of-the-art radar and laser detection technology. Find out more at Cobra.com.
The Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe is brought to you this week by The Handy Holder, the most comfortable and secure way to hold and view your iPad or other tablet devices, providing full 360-degree rotation to meet all users' unique viewing needs. Check them out at handyholder.com.
I think I had too much caffeine today. You ever do that where you just don't have any water like most of the day and you really
what kind of non sequitur was that?
God, I'm just sitting here because I have to cut out the beginning part of the show. I just loaded up on a bunch of water. How are you, my friend?
Baffled. The way things are going here at Grizzly Productions, I don't know what the heck is going on. Let me tell you this. I was on the road.
Yeah.
I don't know how far away North Dakota is. That's how many miles away I went.
Yeah, you flew in. When did you fly in? I didn't realize I thought it was a direct flight, but you had texted me when you had a 3-hour layover.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I think from when I maybe had originally negotiated everything to go out there to when it happened, like I must have either missed an email or didn't input information because I thought I was flying to Fargo, and from Fargo it's a 4.5-hour drive to where I was in a town called Minot, which I have been mispronouncing as Minnow.
Right.
It's Minot. And apparently, and now you're more in touch with this sort of thing than I am, apparently, like, the vast majority of the U.S.'s nuclear weapons are stored there.
In Minot? I think I have heard that. I know that there have been some discussions about the different missile silos, and some of them that have gone offline as a result of UFO sightings over time. Mm. A number of nuclear experts who have worked on some of these different missile silos in there in Wyoming have reported this. I think Roger Salas has written a book about our nuclear armament, and I think he mentions Minot, North Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting statistic, which I believe to be true, and was shared with me by one of several tour guides I had in Minot, that if North Dakota were to become a sovereign nation, it would instantly become the world's third biggest nuclear power because of the number of missiles stored there.
Really?
Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
And now, I found this really interesting, too. Apart from the U.S. and North Dakota, do you know who else makes up the top three, then?
Of the largest nuclear powers in the world?
Yes. I wouldn't have guessed this if I had 20 tries.
I'm going to say Pakistan.
No, but you're on the right track. Kazakhstan.
Oh, yeah, because it was the former Soviet Union. So a lot of those former Soviet republics that broke into their own sovereign nations, much like North Dakota might have, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then I think like Chechnya, Georgia is also a nuclear state that was, you know, not the Georgia on my mind, Ray Charles. I'm talking Georgia that was part of the former Soviet Union. When it broke off, became a nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of cool. That's like a nice little, you know, like in the divorce, that's like a nice, you get the house, I get the nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of couples can relate to that.
Right.
That's the kind of stuff we talk about over on our other podcast, Divorced on Board.
Mm-hmm.
How to keep your missiles. How to keep your missiles
we'll
this week.
We'll tell you how to get tax breaks and how to keep your missiles in your upcoming divorce.
Hey, exactly.
So how was the trip overall?
Overall, I really enjoyed it. The people
out
there
took great
care of me.
It's warm out there. I have no concept right now. I mean, you know, I lived in Montana at this point in the year. Like, I had moved to Montana when it was in September. Mm-hmm. And so it was starting to get a little cold, but it was perfect. Perfect weather.
And, you know, North Dakota borders Montana on the one side there. So they're, you know, they're neighbors. And they're both quite large, those states. I was so ready for some crisp autumn weather because it's been hot and humid here or, like, rainy and you can't go outside and enjoy it. And it was actually hotter in Minot, North Dakota than it was here.
Really?
It peaked out at 89 degrees while I was there. I don't go to North Dakota for that kind of weather.
Right.
Of course, the truth is I went there for work. But rarely do I go anywhere specifically for the weather. I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this here quick as we're jumping all over the place. Where is the 503 area code?
503. Let me do a little searchy search for you.
Oh, you don't know? Sometimes, you know, we just know these weird things.
503 area code. It's California, north, let's see, several locations in Oregon, including Portland, Salem, McMinnville, Tillamook, Astoria. So all in Oregon, looks like. Let's
see. Well, right, that's where all my ancestors are from. Anyway, yeah, I didn't know what to expect of the experience in Minot, North Dakota. I did like the fact going out, I had a really like relaxed schedule. Coming home, it was one of those like scramble to the plane, barely going to make it to the gate in time kind of experiences. But going out, I connected through Minneapolis to Minot Regional Airport, which is not unlike the old Reading Airport, except less glamorous. And as I said, the people out there, they took wonderful care of me. And that town was devastated by flooding very, very recently. So, you know, a lot of the denizens there now are living in FEMA-supplied trailers, that sort of thing.
Right.
But I got to meet and sort of befriend a lot of the guys out there, and they're very, very passionate about the art form. So in that way, you know, I fit right in with them because we had a lot to talk about and a lot in common. I was intrigued. Well, a couple intriguing things. One, I wrestled twice there. On the first day, I would say there was one person in the audience who had any idea who I was. And on the second day, I think there were three. And
that just goes to show you, it's like a snowball effect. It's mass effect, right?
And I mean that like in terms of the paying customers, like backstage and everything, people knew who I was. But out there, they didn't. And I loved it because I got to sort of teach them what I do from the ground up. And that was so much fun. And I was paid by a girl who I guess was maybe 9 years old, I'm guessing. I was paid maybe the nicest compliment of my wrestling career from a fan when she said she'd never – her parents told me that she'd never seen me wrestle before and never heard of me before. And then the little girl said to me, "You're magical." And I thought, that's about the nicest thing someone could say. And then I took off my wizard hat and flew away on a broom.
And she said, "You're magical. And you're even more special now that I know you're friends with Clayton Morris."
Right. So along those podcasting lines, I ran into a number of Grizz fans. A lot of them actually were fellow wrestlers. And some, there was one guy who was a fan of the Sports Report with Paul Roberts, which is the latest release here from Grizzly Productions. You can keep up with not only the Grizz, of course, and Daddy on Board and everything else, like the Trending Show, including Chikara Podcast at GoGo, but the twice-weekly sports report by going to grizzlyproductions.tv. It's our wonderful new website.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, we are on Twitter. We are Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter. Go there and check us out. Follow us there, and you can kibitz with us as we ask for your guilty pleasure songs every week. We're going to be playing one at the end of today's episode. And we also have a brand new master feed for all of our shows at Grizzly Productions. That Twitter account is called Grizzly Produced. Grizzly Produced. So go there and follow us there. And speaking of new shows, well, might as well just throw this out there now. We are working on a new comic book show, are we not?
Indeed we are.
And this is exciting because you and I have, while I have recently come back into picking up some new books, you know, I've been reading some of the new 52 from DC. I'm now subscribed to, I think, about four books. Batgirl, Justice League, Batman. I just started reading Batman. That just came out this week. And Detective Comics. Cannot wait for Flash to come out, and also Green Lantern is available. But other than that, I think you and I, it's safe to say, have not been keeping up with our comic book lore like we once used to.
Definitely not. No, like I think when my wife and I had moved to the ghetto in Philadelphia, space wise, it wasn't possible. And then definitely since the birth of my son, like. Impossible. I tend to do handfuls of interviews here and there throughout the week when I'm not podcasting, because that's my other profession, an interview subject. And on some of these, not all, like some of them are more wrestling-centric. Like, for example, I was recently on The Art of Wrestling with Colt Cabana. And then there are some I do where they ask more about, you know, like podcasts and things like that. But typically, those, the podcasting ones, they often say to me, like, you know, what comic books are you reading now? We know you talk about superheroes on the Grizz a lot. Like, what's caught your attention right now? What's current that you really like? And what my sort of pat response to that is, I think over the years, the money I used to dedicate to my comic book habit goes to my coffee habit now.
Right. And so we talk about quite a bit of coffee on this show. But, you know, we do talk about, you know, quite a bit of comic books here on the show, but we are in the works right now, putting together. And why don't you describe the two individuals who will be coming on board with us? We're also looking for a show title. So on our Grizzly Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe Facebook page right now. Follow us on Facebook. Go over there because we have a poll up. And why don't you describe what this poll entails? We'd love all of our listeners to take part in it.
There are two gents. In fact, we might bring them here on the Grizz, actually, and we'll introduce them to you that way. That are going to be hosting this new comic book show of ours, in addition to Clayton and I, and we each have an idea for what we think the title of the show should be. So there are four titles up on the Facebook page, and we have crowdsourced it to you, the Loyal Egghead Army, 2 million and growing. Voice your opinion over there. See how we tricked you into going to our Facebook page? Go to our Facebook page, and when you get there, vote by going to our Facebook page. See?
Yeah, go to our Facebook page and vote. Of the four titles, pick one you like, and we will crowdsource it, and that will be the new show. We're really excited about it. I mean, these two guys have a lot of knowledge. They buy the books every week. I mean, they buy a lot of books, and boy, do they read them, and they know their stuff inside and out. So, I'm excited about it because I feel like the shows that I find myself listening to, you know, while we publish the sports report here on the Grizzly Productions, I listen to it. I listen to that, episode every Monday and Thursday with Paul. And I Monday's episode this week, I learned a crap ton about all of the stuff that happened in the NFL this week and college football. And if you have any fantasy teams that you sort of keep up on and trades and stuff, Paul knows all about that. So, my wife said as we were listening, she says, God, I have to admit, I'm really impressed with him. He knows his stuff. So, it's exciting to be able to have a comic book show on our own network that I feel like, every week I can be more educated in all the comic books that I'm maybe half reading parts of, or just missing them completely. It'll be exciting to hear their perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, have you been getting a lot of emails lately or tweets or links from folks trying to share like pictures of or plot points
that link me to sites of unsolicited adult content?
No, those are from me. I send those directly to you. We don't want to talk about those on the show.
Oh, you're at Clayton Morris.
I'm talking about
who is this son of a?
I'm talking about Dark Knight Rises stuff.
No,
you've not been getting. I mean, see, people will send me this stuff. I know one of our loyal eggheads had said, "Hey, did you see the new Batmobile?" Mm-hmm. I think Matt Mahler, one of our listeners, had sent that to me. I said, I'm not looking. I'm not clicking the link, and I'm not going to look. I don't want to see it. I don't want to know what it's going to look like until I see a trailer and they show it in it.
Right. No, I'm with you. Yeah, I don't want anybody to ruin that.
There's a couple
over in our Twitter stream of late, have you seen a new Twitter account called For a Dollar? Which allusion to that gag from the original RoboCop movie.
Right. I'll buy that for a dollar.
Right. Like, I intone that weekly. Like, that's stayed with me since I saw RoboCop, like, back in 88 or whatever. So I think that's really funny that, like, we get random tweets.
It's that TV ad that they, on the TV that they look at, kind of zooms on them. And I'll buy that for a dollar. And by the way, I guess they're casting or they're working on the new RoboCop movie.
Right. I believe that to be true. I wouldn't be surprised if the lead goes to Robo Duke, longtime egghead and frequent contributor. Over there, by the way, of course, people getting in on the conversation. We'd like to hear your contributions to our Guilty Pleasure song selection. I'm glad, too, that some of the recent interviews I've been doing, I guess, have been steering people in this direction at long last. We heard from a couple fans of mine who've never heard of this podcast before. They only learned of it very recently that are checking it out. So we're glad to have you on board, and thanks for tweeting us over there. We are Grizzly Bear Cafe.
Yeah, and hey, if you're new to the show, you know what we always invite you to do is go to iTunes and pump out a nice 5-star review for us in iTunes. Just write up a little 1-sentence review and put a little 5 stars. As Mike says, we do not accept anything under 5.
That's right.
You'll be rejected, so we can't have that. Hey, I got to see X-Men First Class, finally.
Oh, you hadn't seen it?
No, we never saw it, and just came out, I guess a few weeks ago on DVD,
right?
And in other places. So we streamed it on our TV the other day on Amazon on demand video in high definition, and it was, it was enjoyable. My wife remarked, she said, "I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to," I did too. I thought. I was surprised. Someone had tweeted and said, "Oh no, Stan Lee didn't make a cameo. How good could it be?" And I didn't realize that until later. He wasn't in that anywhere, was he?
I don't remember. I saw it in the theater, And I don't remember, the thing I remember about it is, if you can allow yourself to accept the fact that this is the X-Men movie universe, not the established X-Men universe, it's perfectly fine. I think you'll like it.
I did like some of the characters that they, you know, when they were doing that thing where Xavier put on Cerebro, mm-hmm. and was looking around the world, you know, seeing the different mutants that were out there and trying to make a connection with them. You got to see some of the different mutants in you know, the little quick flashes that they like to do, which mm-hmm. was cool to see some of that stuff. I thought
they always have something hidden. Like, you remember in one of the earlier X-Men movies, like Mystique hacked a computer screen with a list of mutants' names on it, and like all kinds of the X-Men's real names were listed there. You know, they do right. good things like that.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. And, you know, I thought there was some cheesy moment. There were some saccharine moments. And I thought it was a little overwrought and contrived that they, you know, had to tie it to the Cuban Missile Crisis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a rewriting of history with that. And, you know, I thought there were some cheese moments, too. Some of the graphics at the end when he lifts up the he lifts up the submarine out of the water and tosses it on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's sort of rolling through the trees. I mean, I thought it looked like something out of a cartoon. I mean, it looked mm-hmm. so ridiculous. And what was your take on the guy who plays Xavier?
He was okay, but I'm not sure what he did or how he managed to get that part. Like, certainly there must have been a stronger candidate for that.
Yeah, he played in that movie, The Conspirator, that I saw recently. He was the guy, mm-hmm. the lawyer in The Conspirator that. Trying to, you know, defend whatever her name was in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, which was an entertaining movie. But yeah, I thought the character that played Magneto was pretty good.
Right. Yeah, I liked him. The kid who played Banshee was great.
Yeah, he was fun. I thought it was interesting how they did that. It was neat to see Banshee. And then, you know what I couldn't stand too? I didn't like where they're all kind of kibitzing and sitting around picking their names.
Right.
I thought that was a little cheesy. And then she says, you know, I'm always go with Angel. I'm Angel.
Mm-hmm.
Who the heck was she?
Well, she's the new Angel from the X-Men books.
Oh, she's the new Angel. Okay.
Right. But there was one in there. The one who they kill off, I think, was just made up for the movie. You know, he gets, like, turned into a pile of sand or whatever.
Oh, the black guy who...
That guy was just made up for the purpose of the movie. But the other ones, you know, they're somebody from somewhere.
I thought it was odd, too, that they had, you know, they go to Hugh Jackman at one point when he's like, they're going around trying to rope in all of these X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did that seem continuity-wise to make sense?
Well, yeah, I think it did. It just seemed like it was shoehorned in for the sake of a Hugh Jackman cameo, though.
Right. But, I mean, aging-wise, I mean, is he supposed to be a couple hundred years old? That he's that, I mean, he's that old at that age and you know... Back in the 60s, he looked like he was as old as he is, you know, in the Wolverine movies. It just seemed odd.
Right.
It seemed,
no, I believe that to be accurate. I think, you know, what they've often alluded to in the comics is that he's between 200 and 300 years old. Hmm. So.
Interesting. Yeah, so you had a lot of time to kill on your flight, or in between.
I did, yeah. You know, I was on my way out, as I said, to do this tournament for Northern Outlaw Wrestling that runs the Dakotas, and especially now with the deregulation of Montana, you know, certainly that's something worth looking into. I was talking to other guys, as one of the things that some of us keep track of is how many of the U.S. states we've wrestled in, and I don't know anyone that's wrestled in Wyoming. But I actually met a guy this weekend at Northern Outlaw Wrestling that has. He wrestled in like a ski lodge on like some weird sold show where there was just a midget match, a female match, and his match. And he said like they had to use, what did he say, like snowmobiles to haul the ring up the mountain.
Wow.
So since I had a little bit of time on my hands on this trip, I had this layover at the Minneapolis airport and... Had nothing better to do. I bought Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. And I read about 200 pages of that on the trip. So that's been very interesting reading.
So I'm curious now.
Mm.
You had your iPad with you.
Yes, I did. I never actually took it out of my bag, though, the whole time I was gone.
What? I don't understand you. Help me understand this.
I mean, why? What did I need it for?
What do you mean? There's 8 million things that it can do. Like, I don't mind traveling at all anymore now that I have that in my possession. Mm-hmm. I catch up and watch. I can watch a few episodes of Dexter. Mm-hmm. I could, power through a book. I could. Mm-hmm.
I did. I think I just explained that to you. I powered through 200 pages of Blink.
Right. You purchased. So.
I see. So you steal books. Is that what you're saying? You don't purchase them. You steal them. And
why would you pay for it at the airport? Just walk by, pretend like, and just stuff it in your bag.
That's how I get my copies of In Style.
And then when someone says, "Hey, did you steal a book?" You just reach in your bag and you pull out your iPad. So why would I buy a book? I have an iPad.
Is there an app? Okay. Is there an app on the iPad that makes like a hypno wheel and people look at it and they're like, "He must have bought the book."
So sociologically, I'm just curious. Like what?
Sociologically, you're curious.
I am,
as opposed to other curious.
Right. In this,
I'm not mathematically curious here.
No. I hate math. I don't want to have anything to do with it. But sociologically,
it's for girls.
You know, you were growing up. You were quite a video game hound. You always see. You know, you were always a computer guy growing up. Your Apple II that you had growing up, that we used to play on,
still have.
So you have the iPad. You literally never took it out of the bag.
There was no need for it.
But you're sitting there for a 3 hour layover,
right? Yeah, as I explained, I had a book to read.
You are maddening. Somehow, like I think you do it to me on purpose. Like I said, I have three goals in life: one, to be a great father. One, to be a great husband. The other, to try to bring you along gingerly in the world of technology. And if I can do it one app at a time, that's my goal.
I see.
One thing at a time. We got you on Netflix. That was one thing. So you don't have to wait for DVDs or buy box sets. That was one
thing. Oh, I do. They come in the mail, Clayton. That's how Netflix works. That's how I get my Dexter. You can't watch that thing streaming.
So you prefer to purchase a book and pay, I don't know, how much did you pay? Was it an extra
$14.99?
So you would prefer to pay like $14.99 to have the physical book in your hand than to have the iPad or a Kindle device or something, and to launch the Kindle app and purchase it right there for $9.99.
Right,
and
correct.
And read it digitally. That you prefer the physical book.
Yes, you seem to understand this process entirely.
No, I'm just curious because there is always this. You know, I talk to viewers all the time who say, "No, I love a physical book. I just can't think of reading it that way." And then others who said, "I used to feel that way. I used to never think that I would abandon a physical book, but now that my wife got me a Kindle, I love it, and I'd never go back. There's no reason. You know, I'm gonna carry a huge thick book with me, or on vacation, I've got this little thin Kindle, and it holds thousands of them. You know." What is it about holding a physical book that you find more appealing than a digital page?
Well, I don't know that I could describe it to you in great detail. I just know, if that were my option, like I was going to sit down and read any book, it wouldn't matter what it is. It wouldn't matter if I could get a comic book and save a couple bucks, if I could get a magazine and save a couple bucks, or certainly a book. Like I would rather have the book.
And even though it's just words,
I think part of it might be, and this is just this particular example. You know, for a while now, my wrist has been pretty messed up, and because of how I usually use my tablet device, it's not easy to hold it with the thing that I have to wear on my wrist the vast majority of the time. But even if that were not the case, even if my wrist were completely healed, you know, and it was in no way painful for me to try and hold the tablet device, I would still always buy the book.
Really?
You know, like, yeah, like, you know, I know, I don't know that I've remarked this to you lately, but like, I think despite the fact that obviously you own homes and mountain ranges all over the country, that like, you've got a very New York mentality. Like, you're very much of the big city.
And like, no, I'm not. Explain this.
You are. And to paraphrase Morrissey, the world is not New York. To you, and in that sort of like fast laney type You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's, you know, you couldn't fathom how you could go a weekend without taking you. There was no call. There was no use. I could have not brought the iPad and had a lighter carry-on bag. You know, if, and chances are, if I'd had time to get the iPad out, if anything, I was going to try and do FaceTime to talk to my son.
Right.
But, like, I'm definitely, and you'll see this too, right? I mean, I'm sure you're aware of it. You watch these people walk into posts. You watch these people cause car accidents. You watch these people further committed to the concept of absenteeism parenting. There are people that are like obsessed with their gadgets.
Oh, absolutely.
That the gadgets take precedence over everything. And I'm far removed from that mindset, you know?
No, that's a good thing. I mean, I'm envious of that, to be honest. But I mean, you know, and I've come down in my obsessive need to have, you know, like when I'm with my son and we're playing, I'm not sitting there with one hand looking at, you know, my iPhone scanning headlines. You know, I'm playing with my son. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where one device seems to do quite a bit, right? So if I pull mm-hmm. my phone out, it's because I'm probably going to take a picture of my son, right? And the phone, just, you know, rather than having like a point and shoot camera also with me, you know, it's in my phone, right? It's in the iPhone. I can just take a quick picture that way, and that's, you know, easier for me. It's always on me. But you know,
I'm not sure I understand the point that you're drawing there, but like I said, like you know, I don't require the gadget. You know,
well, it's not a matter of requirement, right? But it's, I think the iPad, like one of its best features is its travelability, right? It's the ability to take it on a trip, and you know, instead of taking, you know, when I go on vacation with my family or whatever, I would take like 3 books, you know, like thick books, and it just makes like it's like an extra bag, right? And I'm not even talking about an iPad. I'm saying like a little Kindle device or something, right? If you can just have those 3 books on a Kindle that you bought, and they're all there, and they're just, you know, digital, and you're sitting in the sun, you're sitting whatever, it's the same thing as sitting there with a paper book, you know? You're not worried about actually ruining the book with water because it's, you know, the pages won't get crinkled. You've got this thing you can throw in your bag as opposed to it being
throwing
destroyed.
The device in the water is perfectly safe.
Yeah. But traveling, I think.
Don't worry, this paper book will not get its pages wet as I wade into the ocean with my Kindle or Super Robot 2.
Because you've got a plastic baggie. No, go on. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I think, you know, to an extent, it also has to do with what you're doing, you know. Like, I had a busy trip.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, you were working.
Right, you know, I've been asked to come out here, and I'm going to perform this number of times, and I'm going to do this many hours of training and seminar and teaching and everything else for these people, and I need to make myself available to them because they wanted to consult me on ideas as it relates to all kinds of aspects of the wrestling business and industry, and then in between there somewhere, I got to try and sneak out here and grab a bite to lunch, or I've got to go over here quick and try and get this done, or I got to catch up with two friends of mine who I haven't seen in quite a little while, so... And then, I don't know how this always happens, man. Like, it's always my goal to, like, all right, I've got a hotel room to myself, you know, or, you know, I'm usually rooming with another wrestler, but I could get a full night's sleep, you know? Like, there's no chance, like, a child's going to wake me up in the middle of the night screaming, right?
Right.
Like, I'm going to bed early, I'm going to sleep in late, I'm going to have, like, one of those luxurious, when I was in my 20s, like, 12-hour sleep-a-thons. Never works out. Never works out. Absolutely not. Like...
What happens?
This, you know, this guy wants to talk to me about, oh, well, how did this thing work and blah, blah, blah. And then I look, oh, my God, it's 1:30 in the morning. Like, God, why am I still awake?
I haven't been up that late in forever.
Well, that's when you get up to go to work.
Right, and then the cleaning lady bangs on the door at 8 a.m.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and she speaks Spanish, you racist. Is that what you're saying?
That's the leap I was making.
So, actually, the people that were the... room attendants, or I don't know, housekeeping at this place where we were staying, they actually spoke Portuguese, which was really surprising to me. I was listening to them for a couple seconds and I thought, what is that? Because it wasn't quite Spanish. And I was like, oh, that's Portuguese they're speaking. That's really unusual.
How would you be able to discern the difference? I mean, I know it's close, isn't it?
It is, but you know, the way they pronounce some of the letters, like there's more, you know, like for example, you might get a J in Spanish that comes out like an H, like a H. Sound like Jorge, for example. But in Portuguese, it would be Jorge, or you know, the J is that like in Janeiro, Rio de Janeiro. It has that kind of sound. There's a couple differences in the pronunciation of certain letters that, you know, to the ear at first, you're like, oh, that does sound like Spanish, but it's a little bit off. And then you realize, oh, no, it's Portuguese that they're speaking. So, but yeah, all being said, I had a great time out there with the guys out at Northern Outlaw Wrestling. I got to meet a bunch of new guys. I got to teach a whole lot. And it was nice. Like I said, I like the dichotomy of it in that everyone there was really familiar behind the scenes with what I've done and like my body of work and came with really intelligent and insightful questions that they really truly wanted answers to, which was great. And then the flip side of it was getting to go out in front of an audience, which I would say was about 30% children. And like I said, though, 99.9% of these people had no clue who I was. And that was like tremendous fun as well. So, you know, even though I dread travel to an extent, like trips like that kind of remind me, or, you know, like last month I went to England for Fight Club Pro, you know, kind of reminded me of, it can be fun to get out there, but, you know, you miss being at home, of course, you know, I get a photo for, you know, on my phone of what my son is up to, and I think, oh, I wish I could be there for that, you know, but...
Yeah,
the reality is you gotta work, you gotta go out there, you know what I mean? You can't, right. Until we get hot on the Powerball, or if the comic book show really takes off in a huge way.
That's right. Did you end up doing FaceTime?
No. Like I said, I actually never took the iPad out of my bag.
Hmm.
The timing was really awkward, too, and you know, my wife had a full weekend as well. So it just kind of worked out. Like, oh, I had a couple minutes of free time, and, she happened to be getting on a train ride at that moment. You know,
Was it 3 hours time difference?
No, just one. It's central time.
Oh, really?
When you cross the Montana border, it becomes mountain time. Yeah. Hmm. So
let's pause here, and because you were talking about holding your iPad, we'll just thank one of our show sponsors. We'll come back, and I'll defend my New York-centric behavior in a moment.
I don't think you need to. It's indefensible, but go ahead.
Highly, highly defensible. our friends over at HandyHolder.com make a great tablet carrying device. You know, Mike has injured his wrist, so, you know, holding one of those tablet devices can be a little heavy, right? I mean, I think the iPad is just about a pound or so.
Right. Apple, let's go already.
Yeah. You know, it's harder because it's the glass. The glass
on
the tablet device on the iPad is pretty heavy.
Also makes it super breakable. Thanks, Steve Jobs.
Right. The Kindle is pretty light, but nevertheless, if you want to be able to hold your tablet device in one hand, like you're a doctor or something like that, or you just, you know, don't want to drop it off the couch while you're sitting there on the couch, you need to get a Handy Holder. And it's very simple. You affix this the dual lock ring to the back of your tablet device, and it snaps right in place and has full 360-degree rotation. So you want to rotate the screen. Works beautifully. I know Mike uses the hand strap one. It's like a neoprene strap that wraps around your hand. That works great. But even to Mike's point about having a heavy tablet, like on an airplane, one of the things that works fantastic is having the leg strap that Handy Holder also sells. So you're sitting there in an airplane, you put the leg strap on, and you don't have to worry about it slipping down on the bottom of the plane floor. Or, you know, if you're on your couch, sitting back, leaning back with your legs up, and you've got the leg strap on, you can sit there and read a book. A digital book, not like the kind that Mike reads. It's all that easy. It's all, and then all the information, this little demo video over on handyholder.com. Go over and then check them out. Did you take the Handy Holder with you? You always say it's always on your tablet. So.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. I never take it off. I don't know why you would once you put it on there.
Yeah. It works so great. I use it all the time. And, you know, walking around the house, you don't want to drop it on your hardwood floor. You don't want to drop it on cement. It's that great. Plus, it's all 100% made in the USA, if you are into such things. You want to support American-made. The guys at Handy Holder do such a great job. It's spelled just like it sounds, handyholder.com. So,
that is true. Now, I want to tell you this. This was really interesting to me as well. As you know, we tend to talk a little coffee here on the program from time to time.
Yeah.
I'm a really big fan, but, you know, they're regionalized, of Caribou Coffee.
Right.
And when I was at the Minneapolis airport, they had one there, and I was thrilled because they have a bunch of flavored drinks unlike what you can get at other places, so I was really pleased.
Yeah, that and the Salt Lake City airport, I think they have Caribou Coffee.
Mm-hmm. A couple out that way do. I'm sure it's more than just them. But then once I arrived in Minot, one of the guys who was kind enough to kind of play tour guide for me for a little bit happened to be a powerful employee or partner, as I've learned, of the local Starbucks. And, you know, a lot of times, too, that comes up here frequently on the program is this concept of, like, corporate rhetoric.
Right.
And charming might be the word that I'm looking for here about this whole experience to me was here was a guy that was not only, like, ensconced in that, in, like, the Starbucks rhetoric, but, like, it was genuine to him, you know? And, like, he knew all these, like, crazy Starbucks statistics and was telling me about this, about his store and this and the blah, blah, blah. And it was, like, fascinating information to me to be hearing this kind of firsthand from him. You know, like, oh, and, you know, this about the sales of the Tribute blend and this about the blah, blah, blah. And, man, he just, like, he knew every little bit of it.
Did you learn anything that you hadn't known? I mean, other than, like, the mixtures of drinks and stuff, was there anything that mm-hmm. he had told you, any inside secrets?
Well, this I thought was kind of interesting. You know, I think you've probably even heard there's like a stand-up comedian who does a bit about this, right? About like the homeless guy that somehow inhabits every Starbucks bathroom.
Right.
Was actually talking about a guy, I think, who was maybe trying to take up residence in their bathroom after he lost his house in the flood out there in Minot. Unfortunately, the weird twist of this is the guy ended up having a bizarre skin infection and had to be, like, taken away in, like, a Ziploc bag or whatever.
Oh, nice.
But, it was really interesting to hear some of that kind of stuff. And
there's a couple of good roasteries, actually. A guy was kind enough, and I think he's actually going to send some to you and me. From North Dakota.
Mm.
A fantastic roastery up there. Mojo Roast.
Mojo.
Delicious. It sent me some bags back a while ago and you know, some fresh beans and grind them up recently, and even some a few months ago, and just delicious, really, really fresh. And you know, spends all day out in the roastery and does them there, and really, really tasty coffee. So surprisingly, they've got, it seemed like we've been hitting some home runs with coffee up in the northern states, right? Like in the Alaska. Mm-hmm. Some great beans that we got up there and some great coffee, and up in North Dakota also. Yeah, Mojo Roast, M-O-J-O, I think is the name of the company. Mm. Good stuff. So, yeah. So anyway, I want to defend my New York sensibilities.
Mm. Right on.
Now, what makes you say that? I mean, it's certainly not just, maybe back a few years ago when I first started mentioning the Kindle to you on the show, maybe mm-hmm. in the first few episodes, you were like, no one uses a Kindle.
And I was right, if you remember how the polling of our fan base went.
Now, tens of millions of Kindles have been sold. It's the most popular e-reader in the world. Mm-hmm. If you go to the front page of Amazon.com, of course, it's the, you know, main object you're going to see on the front page of that. Mm-hmm. And now, as a platform, Kindle is huge as well, right? So you can read it on your iPad, mm-hmm. read it on your Android device, your PC, your Mac, whatever, you know, whatever. It's all mm-hmm. over the place. And, you know, look, I see old people on trains and parks reading Kindles. So mm-hmm. I'd wager to say it's not just in New York that people are using Kindles or, mm-hmm. or reading digital books. In fact, 11,000 libraries around the country have now added Kindle books to their collections.
Mm.
And that was an announcement that just happened last week. So, is that New York centric?
No, what I'm saying is like I said, New York is not the world. I think if you go back now, how long ago was it when we polled our fan base and we had one person at that time respond that they use an e-reader? Think of that in the greater context. There was one, Clayton, if you remember. The right. number was one.
2 or 3 years ago now, right? I'd be curious what it's...
It couldn't have been longer than that. This podcast is not quite 3 years old.
I'd be curious
so
what that number is now.
A year and a half to 2 years ago. One person. So as I was saying, you know, when I mentioned to you, just actually it was in this episode, if you can imagine that. I mentioned in this episode that I didn't take my iPad out of its bag. Mm-hmm. You reacted aghast.
Yeah, but that's
at this
not New
revelation.
York. That's just because I'm a nerd. I could be in...
You've been a nerd as long as I've known you. But
I could be in North Dakota and have that reaction. It wouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with New York, right?
No, it has to do with the fact that you're a New Yorker.
No, it's not. First of all, I live in New Jersey. Let's mm-hmm. be clear.
Let's be clear. You live everywhere.
That's right.
You've got mansions,
I live in your
a
house.
Mountain range,
and I live
a
in
lake.
Your house. Have you? I'm actually in your house right now.
He's on a phone in your house.
He's calling
what?
In your house.
It's this idea, you know what I mean? Like, New York, in a lot of ways, is the true capital of the planet. You know, technology pervades quickest there. News travels fastest there. And, well, that thing to you, because of that, because you've got a little bit of that in you now.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, I think you're right, and I think things travel quickly. Like, when you're getting on a subway 2 years ago, right, and you don't see anyone with a Kindle, okay? Mm-hmm. You don't see anyone with a Kindle. You see people with paper books, right? And then, and I don't know, I mean, and again, this would be interesting from an economics perspective. It would also be interesting from like a sociological perspective, which is, are those people who are closely contained, and perhaps this is like very almost like a Malcolm Gladwell study of something, right? Mm-hmm. Looking at from both of these perspectives, because these people are sandwiched like sardines together on a daily basis, when mm-hmm. someone's sitting next to someone and looks over and says, what is that guy is holding? Here I am holding this really heavy David McCullough book, and it's mm-hmm. breaking my wrist. What is that? He leans over and says to the guy next to him, oh, this is a Kindle. A what? Mm. It's a Kindle. Well, what is it? No, you know, and I used to hear this all the time when that device first came out. I'd be sitting next to people asking other people. It had nothing to do with me. And they say, well, you know, you get it on Amazon.com. It's an e-reader. What does it? You have books on there? Yeah, how many does it hold? It holds, you know, 1,500 books. What? And you just start to see it happen. And I wonder if because, you know, there's people close-knit in that way, they're on a subway, they're stuck next to each other, things pervade more quickly. I mean, would you think that to be the case?
Yeah, I suppose.
I remember Dave saying to me, my co-host on Fox and Friends said he'd, you know, take the train from Connecticut into the city, about an hour train ride. And he said, after the iPad first came out, you know, when it first came out, there was no one with one. And then, you know, people, businessmen and women were sitting there reading their Kindles in the morning on their way into work, or newspapers, actual physical newspapers. And he said over the year, all of these businessmen, it either turned to some sort of digital device or an iPad. And it was, you know, maybe they just wanted to fit in with the crowd. I don't know. You know, who knows mm-hmm. how that goes. But I think there's something to it. Certainly mm-hmm. probably pervades much more quickly than if you're, you know, out spread around by 3 acres in farmland. Mm-hmm. You might not see these individuals as much and therefore be influenced by what they're using, technology and sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But
that's right. Yeah, the world miraculously manages to continue to function regardless.
Now, I wasn't aghast.
I think you should go back and listen to your reaction.
No, I think maybe you're right. I was surprised.
Jim, let's play Clayton's reaction right now.
My response was...
And now, here's Separate Ways by Journey.
What are you, doing your own DJ show? Like, Mike is separately doing his own radio show right now.
I record two of these.
Caller 5, you wanted to weigh in on the new commuter problems we've been mm-hmm. having here in South... what was I going to say? Oh, what I was going to say is that... No, I was aghast because, you know, you had missed Modern Family this week, mm-hmm. and I had, you know, had told you about Hulu Plus, and I thought, hey, you've got 3 hours to kill at an airport. Mm-hmm. You know, you get bored after a book. I mean, I like to sit at the airport and read for like 2 hours, but I like to break it up with something.
But only 2 hours.
You know, I like to break it up.
What am I going to do with this last hour? Is there a television show that fits into this block of time
exactly.
I can watch?
Now you're talking my language. Can I watch a half-hour episode of 30 Rock, you know, to break mm-hmm. it all up? Go to the bathroom, mm-hmm. grab a coffee, come back, watch a little 30 Rock maybe play a little game here for a few minutes.
Play a game.
Then go back to reading my book, maybe read a newspaper. That's why I was aghast. I thought, okay, mm-hmm. so he has the iPad with him. He has access to Netflix. He has access to all of these great shows that he was trying, maybe these series that he probably could have gone through an entire season of on this flight of 24, you know, like on Netflix, mm. or streaming on his iPad.
Oh, you can't watch that stuff once the plane leaves the ground.
Well, no. If you downloaded it, you could. Or, you know, some airplanes have Wi-Fi, so you could just be streaming it on Wi-Fi. Mm. But
that sounds dangerous. Well,
that's what I was saying about the Hulu Plus. I thought, oh, you could have caught up on Modern Family. You could have caught up on, you know, there's all these. It was like 60s Spider-Man. There's a whole bunch of like Spider-Man episodes on Hulu Plus. There's all sorts of fun stuff on there. I thought, no, that'd be something you'd be doing. To hear you didn't take it out of your bag. That's why I was shocked by that.
Mm-hmm. I think I experienced this. Especially, like, as I said, I'm reading Blink right now. is that there's so much valuable information in there that sometimes you just have to put the book down for a few minutes and not do anything.
Yeah.
Like, you really need, you know, like, your head starts to swim with the information and you need to stop a little bit and let it digest, and you've got to put it into perspective or see how it relates to your own personal experience. And, you know, I don't like to rush through a book like that. Now, generally speaking, Clayton reads at a much quicker pace than I do anyway. But even if that weren't the case, a book like this would slow me down, because I'll read a section of it and I'll put it down for a little bit, you know, and I would rather – I'll walk up and down the terminal and let it kind of sit in my head, and then I'll pick it up again and read another 20 pages or what have you.
No, I have a lot of respect for that, I must admit. And yeah, it's part of this sort of – my wife has done quite a bit of research in this, like on the slow movement of things and slow mm-hmm. technology and how to bring sort of – you know, I don't know how to best describe it, but a slower lifestyle, but while still embracing some of these things, you know. And I think there's something to be said for letting things just digest a little bit, you know, and to reflect, because then you lose it. I think if you don't reflect, it's gone from your, you know, you read it, you ingest it. And that's what I try to do, like on the drive in the morning when I'm like reading like the Journal or something, or like the Economist magazine or something on my way in on the train. I like to just kind of turn it off for a few seconds after I've read like a really heavy article,
mm-hmm.
You know, like a 10 or 15 page article about something fascinating, you know, and just kind of close things down. I don't like to jump right to the next article like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll even try to say out loud, because I feel like my memory has slipped a bit as I've gotten older.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll even try to just say out loud some of the important points of the story that I just read, because it helps me remember it later. Like if I want to have a discussion with my wife later about it at dinner or something, it'll help me reflect if I kind of hit some of the key bullet points and regurgitate them to myself.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it helped me recall that for a later time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, that's just – it's. To me, that's part of – at least with these books. I mean, you know, it's something different maybe if you're just kind of like reading a breezy page-turner novel or something like that. But, you know, there's a lot, and there's a lot of, like, examples that are packed into these books. And I'd also thought about this, since we're maybe only 1 or 2 degrees removed from a contact with Malcolm Gladwell. You know, it had crossed my mind about, would it be interesting to interview him? And I think, you know, of course he's a fascinating character, but I really thought, like, I wouldn't even know where to begin putting – questions together for a guy like that.
Right. You just, as you were saying that, I was thinking the same thing. Where do you start? Do you start with his latest book and try to dive into, you know, how does he pick his subject matter? Well, you know, mm-hmm. when he wakes up in the morning, what are the things that he finds fascinating and then wants to set about to do more research on? Because I love the book Blink. I mean, that was one of my favorite books of his. I like the notion, and for those of our audience that haven't read this book, he's written the fourth one is really sort of a collection of essays, but he's written Blink, The Tipping Point, and what's the other one?
Outliers,
right. And I love this idea of, because we all do it, right, that you walk into a room and you have a visceral reaction, you have a blink-like reaction to the people, the things that are in those rooms, or someone asks you to do something, and you immediately know that your stomach or your gut tells you what to do, you know, the right thing to do for you, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
But very often we ignore those signs, and we let the mind sort of get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then our mind sort of takes over, and we end up doing things that perhaps we don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That way, I found it fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And a very interesting example, and there's this book has countless examples like this that was really interesting. He talks about an experiment where a company, a market research company, I guess, took the 44 nationally available brands of strawberry jam and ranked them in order of taste from 1 to 44. And then they took just 5 of them. They took the best one, the worst one, and then sliced into the middle there, 3 from the middle as well. And they took these 5 and gave them to a group of college kids to test to see if they would get the order of them right. Like, from the very best one to the next closest ranking, the next closest ranking, the next closest, and then the worst one to see if they'd get the order correct. When all they did was give them a spoonful of it and ask them, they got the large majority of them right. But when they then asked a different group, to evaluate them on like 19 points, like how was the texture and what was the tartness like and blah, blah, blah. When they overanalyzed it, they got it all wrong. In fact, in some cases, they got it completely reversed.
Right.
Because these people, as he points out, they're not experts on that particular thing. You know, when they took their immediate snap judgment, they taste it and they rank it, they were by and large correct with like professional tasters or, you know, there are people that do that sort of junk. But when they were asked to play the part of experts, which they weren't, they couldn't, the information, they had no method of evaluating. They had no context to try and put these things in. Like, well, when's the last time someone asked them to evaluate the tartness of a jam? And, you know, they just got, it got all out of whack. And that example, which, you know, is all of like one page in this 250-page book of his, was really, really interesting to me, as is the entire book. His work is very, very interesting. And, you know, obviously, I mean, he's a million selling author. Like, his books do tremendously well, and I'm aware of the fact that there are people out there that are very critical of Malcolm Gladwell. I find his work to be very, very interesting reading.
I do too. And the tipping point. So you finished the tipping point too, right?
No, I threw it away. The book was so heavy, Clayton. And I thought, isn't there a lighter way I could read this
isn't
content?
There some sort of electronic device that my best friend has been telling me about?
Well, I took it in the bubble bath with me.
And
the pages got wet. And it exploded. It exploded in the bubble
bath. Not just a bath. Mm-hmm. A bubble bath.
That's right. It was that. And I had a candle.
Did you put the blue, the blue soap in there with you?
Mm-hmm. I had a Yankee candle in there as well.
Essential oils.
Midnight musk.
One of the stories that I loved from Blink, too, is that the doctor at the beginning of the book where he describes he could look at a relationship, he could look at a couple within like a few seconds of watching their interaction.
Right. He could thin slice it as short as 8 seconds.
And figure out whether or not they were going to be married. Like a year from then or 5 years from then.
It was 15 years.
15 years, and he had like, what, a 98% accuracy rate?
Right, 98.5% accuracy he had on that.
Wouldn't you like to hire that guy? Save you a lot of heartache, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, his whole concept of thin slicing is very, very interesting, you know. And he does, I think this is true now. This is the third of Gladwell's books that I've read. Like, they're most interesting in the beginning. Like, a lot of times, the last 25% of his books, they start to just kind of like, I just wish this was over. Like, he definitely puts the most compelling stuff first.
I couldn't agree more.
He puts his hooks in you deep and then just keeps reeling you along.
And you're like, all right, enough examples. I get the fact of the outliers, right? I get your point.
Right. And I think one of the things, I bet you've read this too, that the critics of him say is that, like, the conclusions that he reaches really aren't profound or you know what I mean? Like, it's all very logical. Like,
right.
But he makes the case for these things exhaustively.
Right. And it's true. I mean, you kind of have to do that. This is a new way of thinking about certain things. And I certainly, you know, in the tipping point, the children's section of the tipping point was fascinating to me. And I also thought the crime, the section on crime.
What part about children? What specifically, which one?
Oh, the TV shows. Sesame Street versus Blue's Clues.
Right. Yes, I agree. I thought that was one of the most interesting parts as well.
And how would you sum that up for those of our folks who haven't listened to that?
You mean that particular example?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's talking about Gladwell takes time to examine the two children's programs, Sesame Street, which, you know, was devised in the mid to late 60s, I guess, and, you know, really became popular in the 70s and 80s. I grew up with it. Clayton grew up with it, as to have generations of kids. And then in the 90s, Nickelodeon invented Blue's Clues. And part of what he talks about, you know, the idea behind Tipping Point, and the idea of a word-of-mouth epidemic, you know, the way that you can spread things in a viral sense, you know, viral, that's how he kind of extrapolates to the term epidemic. Part of the key of that is the message itself, and one of the qualities of that message that he finds to be key to something being able to tip is its stickiness. He calls it, does the message stick? When someone hears the message, does the message stick with them? Are they able to retain it? Because if it's not sticky enough, so to speak, they forget it, right? And that seems very logical.
Right.
You know, that's not like some crazy theory. I think that's, and he states it very eloquently. So he talks about the fact that Blue's Clues, and, you know, he explains, like, the scientific tests and the way people collected the data and everything else, was maybe the only children's show with a greater stickiness factor than Sesame Street.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things about it was, because he also talks about the fact that adults will sit and watch Sesame Street with their kids, but adults hate Blue's Clues. And that's because, as you probably remember from this example, Sesame Street always takes care to put in like a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Like a pop culture reference that parents will get, kids won't understand.
Right. Like there's like some, you know, hidden adult content in there that puts a smile on the face of an adult viewer that goes over the head of a child. But Blue's Clues eliminates that. It's specifically designed only to engage the younger viewer. And the way that they're developing minds work. And he really goes into in-depth examination of the success of Blue's Clues. And one of the most intriguing points of that entire thing, which I didn't know, you know, I was far too old for Blue's Clues when that arrived, in spite of the fact that the guy who hosted that was from like two towns over from Clayton and I. You know, the host of that?
Blue's Clues?
Right. He's from Wernersville.
Oh, really? I didn't know. Trust me, I've never seen an episode of Blue's Clues, so I don't even know there is a host.
Yeah. There's a human host. The rest of it's animated. But that guy, Steve, is from like the Wernersville-Robazonia area, which is, you know, like a stone's throw. We could ride our bikes there if for cho-chos. In any event, one thing that differentiated it was, you know, they talked about how each show, you know, it's like a puzzle that the kids have to solve. Like you're getting these clues from the dog and you're trying to figure out what the end puzzle might be. You know, if the clues were like, oh, it's a bird and it goes somewhere where it's cold and it can't fly, like you're to figure out that it's a penguin that they're talking about. Because the kids couldn't retain all the information from a single episode of Blue's Clues in one viewing, to solve this, despite the fact that it went against everything being done in television at the time, Nickelodeon would show the same episode five times in a row. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you got the same episode of Blue's Clues. And by the time that was over, the children's response to it had completely changed. Like they went from not understanding it all to the point where they mastered it, to the point where they were yelling and interacting with the TV. And, you know, they went on to, it goes on to demonstrate in great detail how sticky that program is for its target demographic. And it was very, very interesting reading, far beyond what I just explained to you there.
Yeah, no, it was fascinating because you would think, oh, Sesame Street, that's the bastion of children's learning, right? Turns out it's not so much. When you put it up against Blue's Clues, I mean, an overwhelming number of tests suggest that kids' retention goes up, that their learning skills go, it just on and on. But it's an incredibly boring show. And I love the example he describes in where with Blue's Clues, they just pause. They hold a moment longer.
Right. He called it excruciating.
Right. They ask a question, and they instead of like giving the answer right away, they wait like two beats or three beats longer than you or I would wait to respond, which I thought was interesting. But to parents, it's annoying. But to kids...
Right. Right, like that's where the kid yells at the TV screen. Like he's appealing to you to answer the question for him as if he's interacting and listening to you. So I thought that was really interesting too, because Gladwell rarely does he sort of, you know, he's fairly objective in the way he approaches things, but that sticks out in the fact that he used the word excruciating to describe that. Like that was his own little editorialization of the process. And that's like the only place in the whole book that appears is something like that, is where he refers to Blue's Clues as being excruciating.
Yeah. There's a lot of great examples in there. Crime being one of them that I mentioned in the book too, where he,
right. The whole Bernie Getz story is in there, which was great because apart from an allusion in a Billy Joel song, I had no idea what that was about.
Right. And he got shot. What was it he got? He shot three others. Yeah, he shot three others on the subway car, almost vigilante style. Crime, you would never get on the subway late at night. You know, you risked getting murdered in New York at the time. Of course, crime things shifted dramatically. Was it one thing that led to the shift in like a huge plummeting in the crime in New York City? Was it one thing? No, it was multiple little things that added up to a greater, you know, the greater sum of their parts. And
on the cover of Tipping Point, too. It says how little things can make a big difference. It's an excellent examination and numerous examples there. But like I found with Outliers as he was sort of getting into the home stretch, like the home stretch of Tipping Point is about teenage smoking. Like it did become a tad bit dull. Like I was just like, just wrap it up already. Yeah. Like, he really does lead you, though, every step of the way. Like, you know, he's not one of those storytellers that starts you off at point A and then stands at point D waving to you, hoping you make it. You know, he takes you A, B, C, right to the conclusion. So, And obviously, you know, we've discussed this in a previous episode too, how he sort of at once both praised and criticized for being like a curator of all this information. Like, I can only imagine what a day in the life of Malcolm Gladwell is like, that he can write books like this every couple of years, right? I mean,
right.
His last few all came out in the last 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, how's
just
he getting this?
Enormous amounts of data. And he also writes personal experiences.
And he also writes not just these books, but he's writing great essays for The New Yorker on a regular basis as well. So to be able to have that kind of output is amazing to me. And I've passed him. I actually met him at the Barnes & Noble Nook launch event. When Barnes & Noble, in an answer to the Amazon Kindle, he was there at that event, and they had him read from his newest book, Outliers, and I think they gave the book away free when you bought a Nook. It came sort of like pre-shipped or something, but it was cool. Like, he was sitting there in the front row before the event, and I walked up to him and I told him, big fan of your work and I've read all of your books, and he said, oh, thank you so much. He's just very kind, very quiet spoken, and he's got crazy hair. He's got big, big bushy hair. And then I didn't realize he looks like
that guy from Futurama.
Yeah, he does. Then he got up and spoke and read from his book. He read a couple pages from his book, and it was fascinating. And then I've passed him jogging. When I lived in Manhattan on the Upper West Side, I'd see him jogging. He lived in that neck of the woods too. So I don't think it'd be a stretch to have him here on the show. It'd be great.
Right. No, if anything, though, and I mean this really sincerely, I think I'd be intimidated to have him on the program. Because, like, I don't even know what we would talk to him about other than being like, wow, we really liked your books.
Maybe we just crowdsource.
And he would say, thanks. Yeah. And then there'd be awkward, like, 20 minutes of hang time where, like, he's probably thinking, why did my agent let me do this?
we could even send out, like, a tweet and have people hashtag, like, Gladwell on Twitter. We could – and have him – have our audience – wherever they are around the world, ask Twitter questions in 140 characters or less, and then we'd be off the hook. We wouldn't have to ask any questions. They'd be all Grizz listener questions. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I have to think about it.
Hey, while you're thinking about that, I want you to tell us about our good friends over at Gazelle.com, because if Mike pretends to be a Luddite, he's secretly in love with technology, and when he's trying to get rid of his used gadgets, what he likes to do is he likes to head over to Gazelle.com because he can get cash for his used electronics. And I know that you're very aware that coming up very, very soon is the brand new iPhone.
Because this old one that we hate is finally going to be retired.
Right.
They're going to bring us a new one.
In fact, next week, no, 2 weeks from now, I'll be heading out to cover whatever event happens at Apple's campus for the launch of the new iPhone.
Apple's campus?
Yeah, a big business campus. It's not going to be in San Francisco. Apparently, it's going to be on Apple's campus this time because Oracle is holding a big event in downtown San Francisco.
Hey, interesting enough, I always see ads, it's confusing to me. What does Oracle actually do?
It's a good question.
Because it's like, is your system in order? And it's like a picture of like a box with a wire. And I'm like, what is that? What do you do? What are you offering?
Oracle really doesn't do a lot of consumer-based stuff as much anymore. I mean, they do a lot of enterprise security and server technology. And so, huge company, Maybe I can give a better description. I'll do a little wiki on Oracle because, I've been asked to describe them before. I always have a difficult time explaining exactly what they do. So I'll do a little wiki. You tell us more about Gazelle.com.
I'm amazed I stumped the Morris.
Yeah, you did.
So what do you know there? Well, yes, we should take a moment. And interesting enough, maybe not such a bizarre coincidence because we talk about Cobra Eye Radar quite a bit here on the program, to be fair. I want to talk about this because this is a gadget and gizmo that we all know and love. The Cobra Eye Radar. And I recently, I got the chance to meet in person a guy who I'd kept in touch with via email for quite a while, who's based out of Saskatchewan. He's part of Gold Dragon Wrestling up in Saskatchewan. Was saying to me, he said, I just ordered my Cobra Eye Radar because the long road trips he's got to go on everywhere that he goes. And I think it's because Saskatchewan is large.
Yeah, I would bet.
I think it's a big place. Clayton, do you think that Saskatchewan is most likely where the Sasquatch lives?
It could be.
You should know this, right? Is that like a derivation? Is the name derived from that?
No. Could
we say that it is?
I don't know. Here's Oracle, by the way, is an American multinational computer technology corporation that specializes in developing and marketing hardware systems and enterprise software products. So I was right in kind of summing it up, particularly database management systems. So, for instance, you know, I even know this, our expense report software for Fox is built by Oracle. And I want to put my fist through the computer screen ever using their software. So, but, you know, enterprise solutions. So if you were a company that had gotten to, you know, you have like thousands of employees and you say to yourself, you know what, we need to come up with a database solution for managing our customers' shipments. You might hire Oracle to do it for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. So you know, there you go. But anyway, I want to finish telling you about Gazelle.com because...
Well, I was going to talk about Cobra.
No, I had just started talking about Gazelle. Did you hear me?
Right, but yeah, but you got me thinking about gadgets. That's why I was thinking about Cobra.
Well, we can tell our listeners about them in a few minutes.
All right, all right.
Gazelle.com is one of our other show sponsors, of course. And, you know, if you've never used Gazelle, you go to Gazelle.com and you type in the gadget that you have, right, and what condition it's in. And they're going to send you, or they're going to give you a quote, number one, about how much they'll pay you for it. But number two, they'll pay your shipping to send it to them. In many cases, they'll even send you a box. And I know with the iPhone, if you're looking to upgrade your old iPhone to the new one that's coming out, or even your old iPod Touch to the new iPod Touches that are coming out, you know, they'll give you a quote, what condition it's in, and then they'll send you the box. Mm-hmm. It could not be simpler. And you know, they have a great security team there as well, so you don't have to worry about your data. They'll wipe it clean for you, so you don't have to worry about any personal data going in the wrong hands. They'll take care of that for you. And they'll email you every step of the way. So they'll let you know, hey, we received your box. We're opening it. We're checking it. We've examined it. And yes, in fact, the quote we gave you earlier is good, and we will send you a check. They'll even send you a PayPal payment, however you want it. It's so easy to use. And a little drop-down menu when you're checking out in Gazelle just says, how did you hear about us? Just click on Clayton Morris Podcasts, etc., and that'll let them know that you found out about them from us. But now is the time. I think they're giving some extra bonuses, too, if you turn in your iPhone. For them, this is like their Super Bowl, right? This is like their biggest time of the year when Apple releases a new iPhone or even an iPad. When those two come out, they get a huge turn-in ratio because people want to get their cash. They want to just be able to take that money and go and buy the new phone. So check them out, Gazelle.com. We thank them so much for their support of this show. Really, we couldn't do this show without our great show sponsors. And coming up a little bit later, we'll tell you more about our friends at Cobra and a new technology they've just come out with as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, I had a chance to see... I finally went to the theater last night. We actually went to see Moneyball.
What the heck? I don't even know what that is.
It's that sports movie, so I don't know if you'd really be into it. It's a baseball movie.
All right.
It's based on that book, Moneyball.
Oh, that...
No, I didn't know much about it. I did know a few years ago, 60 Minutes did a feature on sabermetrics. Are you familiar with what that is?
No, I don't know what that is.
I think you would probably find this fascinating, not being necessarily a professional sports fan. But sabermetrics, I think, was developed by James Willis, I think
Vanderbeek?
Is his name. James Willis, years ago. Hmm. He was a guy that basically analyzed baseball and realized that teams were purchasing players, paying salaries for players that weren't helping them win, right? Like paying to have Barry Bonds on your team, you know, might be great to sell t-shirts and might be exciting when he hits a home run, but he's not getting on base all that often, right? And he analyzed it and figured out that you could basically not pay the type of Yankees salaries that they're paying to these star players, and you could basically get a team of scrappers who, if you analyze their statistics, are likely to get on base, their on base percentage. Now, how did they get there? Well, they might have walked, right? They might have gotten hit by a pitch more regularly than other individuals. They might not swing at a lot of pitches, so they walk a lot. They get on base. Maybe they hit little singles. You know, they hit singles, but they don't hit a lot of home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so his... I think it was called sabermetrics, anyway, his analyzation, but like nobody ever took him seriously. This guy, he developed this, I think, like in the 50s or 60s or something. But there was this one guy, he's played by Jonah Hill in the movie, little pudgy Jonah Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy Bean is the coach from the Oakland Athletics, and it's a true story. In early, I think in 2001, the Oakland Athletics made it to the playoffs, deep into the playoffs, with some marquee players. They had like Jason Giambi. They had Johnny Damon. They had these like big marquee players that, because they were free agents at the end of that season, they basically lost their entire team of stars. Mm-hmm. And the New York Yankees basically paid for them. And they, you know, they ended up getting multi-million dollar contracts. And the Oakland Athletics had like the lowest payroll in the business, so they couldn't pay for them. Mm. So, at, you know, in the offseason, just after they'd lost and had made it that far into the playoffs, almost to the World Series, the coach or the general manager, Billy Beane, who was meeting with the owner, the team's owner, and he's like, you know, we need to try to replace these guys. We need to do this. And the owner's like, look, I can't give you the money. We don't have it. So he's like, well, we're not going to get anywhere then this year. We got to try to replace these marquee players. And he ends up discovering this guy, Pete, who was sort of a student. He was a Yale economics student who was working for the Cleveland Indians, finds out that he's not being listened to there, but he's embraced this idea of sabermetrics, kind of calls him and says, hey, how would you like to come work for the Oakland Athletics? And he brings him in, and he basically shows, he's like, look, we can put together a team for like one-tenth the salary of the New York Yankees. It might be like a team of outlaws and misfits, you know, like misfits.
Outlaws.
Like yeah. In fact, one of them, I think, Giambi's younger brother was like always at strip clubs and off the field. He was a kind of a disaster. But this guy, this Yale economics student, was like, it doesn't matter. He gets on base. You know, it doesn't matter that he literally has a broken right left, like a broken knee, and he has to wear a brace. He can't run anymore. It doesn't matter. He gets on base. So all of the way in which we think about baseball and you know, the things that matter, like he was like, I don't want you ever to steal second base. He's like, but that's why you hired me. You hired me to steal second base. He's like, no, I hired you to get on first base. I didn't hire you to get thrown out at second. So it was really, really great. And Brad Pitt plays the coach or the general manager, Billy Beane. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten great reviews. I mean, it's really high up on Rotten Tomatoes right now. And everyone who saw it this weekend was tweeting saying they just thought it was fantastic. We thought it was great. I mean, really, really well done. Aaron Sorkin wrote the adapted screenplay from the book. Well worth it. But it was a toss-up for me. I wanted to see that and the movie Drive. Have you heard about this movie?
Drive? No, I don't think so.
Ryan Gosling, I guess, is the guy. And it's supposed to be like tense from the first moment of the movie. Everyone was saying, I was reading reviews of this thing, it's fantastic. It's like, I think upwards in the 80s on Rotten Tomatoes right now, and it's like a thriller where he's like leading a getaway car. He gets sort of roped into being like a getaway car driver or something. I don't know, but it's like the whole movie is just tense and you don't know where it's going, and it's really well done.
Hmm.
Sounds like my cup of tea. I didn't even know anything about that movie.
Right, yeah, neither do I.
So, some good movies out there. Did you get to see anything recently?
No, sir. No, I have not seen any movies lately. I'm attempting to get caught up on the fifth season of Dexter. I realize imminently on television the sixth season is about to begin.
When does that start?
Soon. I've seen the ads like popping up left and right, so it's got to be soon.
I can't wait for that.
Yeah. Can you believe it's almost October already? Like,
I know.
What's up with this stinking hot weather?
Exactly. You know, it's like I walk outside because of all the rain we've had here, and it's sad for those folks down like in Texas who have been begging for rain, you know, but it has just been brutal. It's been nonstop rain, and it's been so humid, and the ground is so saturated, and trees are falling over, and people's basements are flooded, and, you know, flooding insurance won't be covered, you know, that people don't have flood insurance, so their houses are, you know, underwater in a lot of these areas, like high streams and creeks and everything. But you walk outside, it's like walking into a sauna, and there's like mosquitoes all over the place. I don't want to leave the house.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Bring on the autumn weather. Hopefully before you and I team up. In a couple weeks, we're going to see each other. So I would like for the autumn weather to have firmly settled in by the time that arrives.
By then, finish season 5 of Dexter, because we'll start. Maybe we'll have the first few episodes ready to go, and we can watch season 6 when you're up.
No, that would be a bad idea, because by the time that DVD comes out, if I watch like the first couple, and then I have to wait like a year to see that. I'll forget. I won't remember, you know, what's next. So that may not be such a hot idea. But
I can send you the MP4 files, and you can put them on your iPad.
I don't know how I would do. First of all, I've got to find it in the bubble bath.
Right.
I don't know what I would do. So I want to tell you this. We've seen a couple suggestions come in during this episode of The Grizz for guilty pleasure song selections. I want to say, thus far, I've seen nothing that has caught my attention. However, I did get a suggestion from an old friend. Hotshot Drew Lazario sent me some suggestions from a guilty pleasure playlist that he made for himself.
Oh, nice.
I was struck by two things when he shared with me some of what was on there. One, every song on his list I have in my iTunes. And two, the vast majority of these would not pass for guilty pleasures on this show. They are the kinds of things we would proudly admit that we listen to.
Right.
In fact, there's at least two or three on here which we've played, not during the guilty pleasure, but preceding the guilty pleasure.
Before we ever even started guilty pleasures, these were just right. Our song choices.
One of Clayton's very favorite 80s songs, Puttin' on the Ritz by Taco, is on there.
Really?
Yeah. Too Late for Goodbyes by Julian Lennon. I don't think that's a guilty pleasure.
No, that's fantastic.
Right.
I love that song.
There's quite a few on here. The St. Elmo's Fire, Men in Motion by John Parr. I think that, all right. You know, I think that could, that sort of deserves its own thing there. She's a Beauty by The Tubes is definitely not a guilty pleasure.
No.
You can windows down and sing along to She's a Beauty. The Tubes are such a weird act, too. Like, nothing of theirs really... They did have one other radio hit, didn't they? The Tubes, like, Talk to You Later or something.
Yeah.
Was their other one. But, you know, their stuff usually has a much harder edge than that stuff. But I did get a suggestion that I'm going to sit on. If nothing else worthy comes creeping in here, I've got something from the Hot Shot to serve up a little bit. I tell you what here. Let me quick jump over. I'm interested to see here. Have you been in our Gmail box?
No, I haven't. Mm-hmm. While you do that, I'll jump over and see how the poll stands right now for our new comic book show. How about that?
All right.
You jump
and
over
I want to tell you this, too. For those of you who have been tweeting or whatever asking about this, you're asking about Chikara's first pay-per-view event, which is called High Noon on November 13th. How do you get it is what people have been asking me. And I realize this is fairly new, right? Even though maybe MMA and wrestling fans have been hearing about iPay-Per-View. If you don't necessarily travel in the exact right circles, maybe iPay-Per-View is new to you. And it's streaming. You can see it on your computer or like through your Roku box or things like that.
Right.
And possibly on your mobile device as well, because the service that's going to be delivering this iPay-Per-View to you, Chikara's High Noon, Go Fight Live. You can find them online at GFL.TV, like Go Fight Live. GFL.TV, that's where you go, and you have to make a free account for yourself there, and then you can buy the iPay-Per-View. You could buy it right now if you want to get it in advance. You know, what did Mean Gene used to say? If the lines are busy, try your cable, or again, you don't have to worry about that. You can go sign up right now and get High Noon. That's how you can check it out. And because there's a free channel for Go Fight Live on your Roku box, if you have that all set up, then you can watch it on your TV. You don't have to watch it on your computer screen. There's also going to be certain mobile devices. Some of that tech stuff is lost on me. I don't really know. But if you're curious, if you're one of the people come up and ask me that in person, they've been asking me that online, that's where you've got to go. You've got to get the free account through GFL.TV in order to watch our streaming internet pay-per-view on November 13th. Starts at 4 p.m. Eastern time, so not too late for you Europeans.
I'm just going to buy the book.
Right, or you could wait for the book, the novelization.
Hey, I'm over in our Facebook fan page, the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe Facebook fan page. It's a great place to be. And the poll question, we need everyone helps their help in choosing the show title for a comic book show. There's four choices right now. The clear long shot, the clear winner currently, as it stands, we're keeping this up for 48 hours. Right now, the weekly long box has the most votes.
Mm.
It's way out in front. In second place is By Odin's Beard, a sort of Silver Age reference. Number two, the Board and Bag Weekly has been popped up there.
Mm-hmm.
The Comic Book Super Show has zero votes.
Mm.
So, and Great Caesar's Ghost has zero votes as well.
Mm.
So, right now, the weekly long box is the clear winner. Now, you're in our Gmail account anywhere?
Yeah, I am. Not a lot heading on over here, actually. I'm going to read this one here, and I don't know. I haven't. You're going to hear this as I'm hearing it. Blair wrote to us, writes, "Hey, guys, great show as usual. I used to work for Target, but as for the huddle, it's mostly on the floor after the store opens, but isn't too busy. The main reason is they normally do package aisle straightening up in that section they're meeting in at the right at the end of the meeting. Blair goes on to say, I never really felt a bonding by doing the huddle, nor do I think anyone does. That was kind of what I was trying to say. thanks for sending that in. Also, Blair says, P.S., which is postscript. So why isn't your email address on your website? I had to re-listen to your podcast and hunt it down. Just wondering.
Ooh. Well, you know, because... Well, you know, that maybe that's what we could do. We could add it to every show page of our new website, grizzlyproductions.tv, mm-hmm. so that within the show of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, then you'd have our email account, which is grizzlybearcafe@gmail.com. Yeah, because we don't have email accounts for a lot of the other shows. Well, we do, I guess, the trending show and Daddy on Board, but mm-hmm. yeah. So, all right, we'll set that up. We'll put that on every show page.
Mm-hmm. We do like to hear from you.
That's true. And I like more work. So mm-hmm. that's just something we can add. Something we can add. So now you were up in Saskatchewan.
That's right. And I was hunting Sasquatches.
You were hunting mm-hmm. Sasquatches.
Right. That's the plural form, right? Does Jim Harold ever refer to them in the plural? He's really the expert.
Right. He calls them Sketchies.
Sketchies. Okay, right. Then.
Which is a type of bagel meal you can get up there. Mm. Very local, very unique, very tasty too. Mm-hmm. So you were in North Dakota, and someone was telling you about the Cobra Eye radar that they were about to pick up.
Right. It was someone I had an opportunity to talk to a little bit about all things, not just Grizzly Productions, not just Chikara, but we were talking all kinds of different things in media and whatnot, and had mentioned that you know, because of the long road trips that he goes on, and I guess this company Gold Dragon Wrestling, they go all over Saskatchewan. And this is how I inferred from what he was saying. I felt that he was trying to communicate to me the long distances he had to travel to make these things happen. I was talking about the Cobra Eye radar device, which is great for travel. And he traveled alone. He drove, I think he told me, 5.5 hours to be there in North Dakota. So as I know as well, when you're driving by yourself, it's great to have the Cobra Eye radar in your car because it keeps you awake. It's more alert, right? You're getting these up-to-date updates. Imagine that. You're getting an up-to-date update, Clayton.
That's amazing.
Can you imagine anything more redundant? You're getting up-to-date updates from the Cobra Eye radar system as you're going along. And simply put, this is the most advanced system of its kind available right now. You don't need to go shopping around and wonder if there's something better. No. You can tell from all the industry awards that it's won. And sometimes, too, you know, when I bump into people and they're like, where do I get that thing? You're always talking about that thing, the Cobra Eye radar. Where do I get it? You can get it online through Amazon.com if you want. You could go into a retail operation like particularly Best Buy and find it there. And that's where you're going to get the best variety because the iRadar system, there's a special one that's just for iDevices like iPhones and iPads or things like that. And then there's an Android one. That's different. If you want to have, you know, either or there, check out Amazon.com or Best Buy. Because obviously, like, if you go to the Apple store, you're not going to find the one for Android there, right? That kind of goes without saying.
Sure.
So just so we're clear about that. Yeah. And, two, you know, whether you're having to be online, you want to check them out over at CobraEyeRadar.com. Or if you're a Facebooker, go over to Cobra Electronics as one word. Check them out on their Facebook page. There's all kinds of stuff going on over there. But CobraEyeRadar.com in particular has the demo video. And that's really what you want to check out to get a full sense of how this thing works. The free app that you download onto your smart device and it pairs with it. And really how simple it is. And, you know, when I was setting mine up, actually, because mine communicates with my wife's iPhone, I have a dumb phone. We actually had a couple hangups trying to get it, and right there, it just walked you through, like, oh, that didn't work, try this. Oh, that didn't work, try this. And then it did. Like, they knew exactly what had to be done to make it happen. You know, like, there's nothing worse than when you get something like that, and all you want is for it to work, and you're like, I guess I got to call this 800 number and wait, like, the 15 minutes in the electronic queue for someone to come on and tell me,
right.
Like, oh, did you take the sticker off the back?
You know, or what, you plug it in?
Right, yeah. So, no, I really like that. These people are so on top of everything. And maybe the best example of that, that whole thing about their work ethic, the philosophy, everything that makes the Cobra system so revolutionary. And you know, they're tagged as the most advanced detection system in the world for good reason. That Aura driving hazard database really says it all. The fact that every bit of information in that network that is available to you at a second's notice is verified and re-verified twice a day to make sure that it is as accurate as it can possibly be. That really tells you the tale. Go over and check out our friends at CobraEyeRadar.com. They have basically everything you could ever want to know. An overview, a video demo, instructions on how to install it. There's even like a message board and community over there if you want to check in. You've got questions that you need answers to, et cetera, et cetera. And remember that, you know, if you're thinking about giving it as a gift as the holidays draw near, you've got someone who does a lot of road tripping, maybe someone who could use some relief from the popos. Whatever the case might be, remember, if you're looking to buy that in a retail operation, your best bet for the selection is Best Buy. Of course, you can also order them online, as I know people like to do their holiday shopping over at the Amazon.com. You can find it over there as well for iOS and Android both. This show and a whole lot of other programs in the Grizzly Productions Network would not be possible without their support. We love them, and we would love it if you would support them. Even just taking a few minutes to go by their website and checking it out for yourself, even if it's something that may not be right for you at this moment, visit CobraEyeRadar.com and tell them Clayton Podcasting, etc. sent you.
That's right. We thank them. And also check out their brand new tag, too. Cobra just made a tag, which is like a little thing you add on your keychain. Never lose your smartphone again. Never lose your keys again. Check that out, too. It'll blow you away. We'll tell you more about that next week. The great new tag system from Cobra. Hey, before we go, did you – and I know you're a Netflix fan. And all of the seasons of this show are on Netflix. You can watch it on your iPad when you're on the toilet. And they're short, too, and they're hilarious. It's a British show that my wife got me into a few years ago called The It Crowd or The IT Crowd. Have you heard of the show?
I'm aware of it, but I've never watched it.
Very, very funny. Give it a shot. I'm telling you. I'm curious how many of our listeners like it, but it's it follows these two guys who work down in the IT department, basically shoved all the way down to the basement of this corporation, and they get a new boss. And she comes in and has to, you know, and she becomes quickly, you know, quickly their friend, but she's also the liaison between what she has to, you know, between them and of course the corporation. Very, very, very funny. So if you're missing like sort of a British office style show in your repertoire, you will love the show. Maybe you can watch an episode or two. You'll be roped in. I think they have four seasons. No, there's five seasons. They just added the fifth season to Netflix, but they're all there. All five of them are there, and you blast through it. I think the seasons are only six episodes long. So,
I will say this: the thing I'm looking to move on to once I get caught up on Dexter is Twin Peaks. I've had it waiting in my queue for a while now. I really want to get into Twin Peaks.
Now, did they finally release that on streaming or just from the discs?
Off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you because I put it in the queue so long ago. I don't remember if it's the instant queue or the mailing queue. But, you know, the big hang-up for a little while, when we first talked about Twin Peaks, was that for some reason, the pilot episode wasn't available. Like, how dumb is that?
Yeah.
Like, it was licensed separately out to, like, a video company that went under as, like, a movie or something, and they could never get the rights back for some stupid reason. So all of Twin Peaks was out there except the pilot.
It was weird,
I don't know, but I really want to get to that because I've been – that's like the one that I've been meaning to get to, and I just never, ever get to it. I also wanted to tell you – thank you, by the way, because through Spotify, which is a thing, I listened to the new Lindsey Buckingham album.
Oh, you did?
I did, and it's very good, but I want to say this. You know, these last couple years, Lindsey Buckingham has become a whole lot more prolific. Certainly more than he was in either the 80s or 90s as a solo artist, right?
Right.
He's done maybe four albums in the last 7 years, something like that. If you've heard any of his recent solo stuff, this album sounds exactly like more of the same.
Right. Yeah.
Like the way he produces it, the way he mixes it, you know he's like a studio nut like that. Like this could his last two or three, it could just be one giant album of like 30 or 40 songs. They sound roughly all the same. I don't really mean that as a criticism because I like his stuff, but there's like a sameness to his sound that like somebody else has got to get in there. Like, you know, he was famous for in the heyday of Fleetwood Mac, right? He was the guy that wanted to turn the dials the other way to come up with Tusk. Like somebody needs to start turning the dials in his studio.
Right, I agree with you. And the whole album does sound very similar. And there's not only a sameness among all of his albums, there's a sameness within the album, right? So it kind of blends together a little bit. You forget that you're like, oh, am I still on that same song or did it move to another song now?
Yeah. Right, yeah. And even though, you know, some of the stuff he tries to put out there, like some of the imagery he tries to create, can be really quite, like, lovely or innocent. And you can tell it's definitely influenced. You can tell when he became a parent and, like, the influence having children had on his worldview. In spite of this, there's always, like, an underpinning of, like, cynicism or darkness to what he's saying. And that remains unchanged. Like, if there's something about that quirk of Lindsey Buckingham's songwriting that's really appealing to you, fear not.
Yeah.
It is still there in his latest release, which is called Seeds We Sow.
Yeah, good stuff, though. And did you feel like, well, I had said it sounded like a little bit of a fall album.
Right, I didn't get that vibe. Like, but you know how it is. Like, sometimes it just has to be the setting where you experience the album, and like,
yeah.
Maybe I think at times we like impose that on the album. Like, there are definitely albums I know I feel that way about. But I bet you if we said that to all, you know, the 2 million people in the Egghead Army, they'd be like, "Oh, that's not an autumn album to me."
Yeah, I listened to it with the windows open, and it had like that nice fall crisp day like 2 weeks ago, and that's when mm-hmm. I first listened to it. So it reminded me of that. And then I went on Spotify and I started creating like a fall playlist, mm-hmm. and immediately added, and then it really didn't become a playlist. I got frustrated because it was all James Taylor's Double Live album. Like, I was dragging all of these songs from that album in there, bypassing some of the ones I don't like, and just dragging it over into my little fall playlist. And when I looked over, I was like, oh, they're just all songs from that album. So I just retitled it James Taylor Live. But
right on. Yeah, like, I definitely came across that. I don't know where I was, but I was at a wrestling show somewhere, and I was signing autographs, and a woman came up to me and said, "Oh, you know, I'm a Michael Nesmith fan as well. Like, I think she must have listened to our podcasts or something." And I was talking to her about the fact that I thought, like, the First National Band trilogy, Magnetic South, Loose Salute, and Nevada Fighter, like, that to me is, like, the essence of autumn. And she was saying, that's so weird because, like, to her, that's like the dog days of summer. So, yeah, you know, I think, like, the way you experience the album, you know, the timing of it, the setting might somehow influence your perception of it in some way. But so anyway, yeah, The Seeds We Sow by Lindsey Buckingham, another, you know, standard release. It's not better or worse, I think, than any of his recent solo work. It's been an interesting year for new projects like that. I was really thrilled with the new They Might Be Giants album. You know, there have been some that have been, you know, real high points.
Yeah, the Decemberists' new album this year was pretty good. Yeah, I think They Might Be Giants maybe my favorite album of the year so far. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to, I know it's a little passe to say it, but hey, Coldplay has a new album coming out in a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to the fall music preview on All Songs Considered.
Mm.
And there's some great albums that they played. I mean, they were not playing albums. They played the three of them got together, and they were chatting about some of the artists that they had heard, and some of these albums come out in November and October, and they played a bunch of the songs, and I would say well over half of the songs they played from different artists whom I've never heard of before, mm-hmm. I wanted to get. So some good stuff coming down the pike, and maybe I'll try to find some of those names of those albums and mention them next week on the show.
Yeah. Well, I just got, actually, a friend of ours and a fan of the program gave me a stack of CDs to listen to, some new stuff that he thinks that perhaps I've never heard before. So I'll let you know, because this week I'm finally going to get to crack into it a little bit and give a listen to this stuff that was given to me. So, but since we're talking music and since we've really overstayed our welcome on this episode of The Grizz, I suppose we should deliver to you a Guilty Pleasure song.
Indeed. I think it's a good point. Guilty Pleasure songs are those, according to Mike and I, you know, we're really the threshold here for what
we are the gatekeepers, Gozer.
We will, you know, what we find embarrassing, right? Those songs that, well, maybe crank up your window a little bit when you pull up to a stoplight because you'd be embarrassed if the person next to you would hear it. And you've picked one from our audience this week.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a new egghead, but an old friend of mine, Hotshot Drew Lazario, sent this one in. And this one I'm on the fence about because this is a band that I really like. They're an 80s act from the UK called Swing Out Sister.
Mm.
And they're essentially known for this song. This is the song they are best known for. But they've got a ton of other albums. And over the years, they kind of changed from like a new wave pop act into almost like a jazz lounge act. Their last two albums, Where Our Love Grows, which is maybe 6-7 years ago, and their more recent one, Beautiful Mess, are really like kind of like quiet, like ambient jazz type albums that you can sort of work with them in the background. You know, they're unobtrusive. They allow you to work. I keep waiting for them to come back with like a really good pop album, but I don't think that's on the horizon for these two. one of my very favorite songs by them is actually, it's a cover song, which I didn't know, but it was maybe their most predominant U.S. hit of the 90s called Am I the Same Girl? Nevertheless, this is probably their best known hit. Is it a guilty pleasure? Would you roll your windows up, Clayton, if Swing Out Sisters' song Breakout came on?
Oh, no. Well, yes. Mm. I don't know.
Right. See, I'm on the fence about it. Maybe I'd look to see who's in traffic around
me. Right. That's right. Well, here it is. What is the name of it again? It's Breakout.
That's right. The 1986 crossover into 87 hit Breakout by Swing Out Sister.